The show's live and local. It's your connection to local music and more. And we have waiting for us in our studio to perform some live and also talk about a concert by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, on which they are going to be the soloists, classical guitarist Jason Vio and bandoneon player Lydia Kaminska. They're going to be playing some music by Piazzolla on the Illinois Symphony Concerts in Bloomington tonight and in Springfield on Saturday. First part of the show will be a conversation with singer-songwriter Ellis Paul, who is going to be in Springfield tonight at the Hoagland Center for the Arts giving a concert. And we'll hear some of his music, beginning right now with a song called Rose Tattoo. My guest in this portion of Live and Local is Ellis Paul, who was a singer-songwriter born in Maine, was in Boston for a good while, and is now living in Virginia. He sort of made his way around over the years as singer-songwriters, and particularly people who are involved in the folk scene, seem to do. He's going to be at the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield tonight at 8 o'clock. And we're very pleased to have him on the phone with us from Virginia at the moment. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kevin. I appreciate it.
And we started out with a song from your latest album. The album is called The Day After Everything Changed, and this song's called Rose Tattoo. Before I get into farther into anything else, why don't you just tell us a little bit about where the name of the album title comes from. I know it comes from one of the songs. And then that particular song, what was its inspiration?
Well, you know, it reminds me of a story I've heard about documentary filmmakers. They go out and they shoot 40 hours of film, and then they go back at it and they try and find some sort of line that takes them through the path of those 40 hours that they can whittle down into a journey of 1 hour. And that's kind of what doing an album with 15 songs is like. You come into the studio with 30 songs and you strip it down to 15, and then you figure out what is the theme that connects all of these that we can somehow help us choose the songs and maybe find the title. And it seemed that the characters in a lot of the songs were going through a major crossroads in their life. And I did have a song called The Day After Everything Changed. So we decided that that would be a good sort of summation of the whole record. So we call the record The Day After Everything Changed.
Ah, so I misremembered, and that isn't one of the songs on there.
No, it is.
Oh, it is one of the songs. Okay, good. And you said the characters in the different songs. Do you imagine different characters in your various songs, and how often are those characters you?
Oh, they're always partly me. I can't really step out of myself enough to invent somebody that's completely outside of me. Even when I'm, you know, if I picked a historical figure like Lincoln or something, there would still be pieces of me within the character. It's sort of like acting, I guess, in a way. You just kind of bring with your own biography with the biography of the characters that you're writing about. You kind of intermingle them. So, you know, with Rose Tattoo, it's about a family going through some economic struggles, and pieces of that in my life are in there. And I'm certainly not unemployed or laid off. I'm not a laborer of any kind. I'm a folk singer and self-employed, but the financial struggles are always there because of that.
Have you ever studied Jungian analysis by any chance?
You know, I did. It's been so many years, I'm sure it's somewhere in the back of my brain, but I don't think I directly reference anything on purpose, but it might be there. What are you hearing?
Well, not necessarily hearing anything, but, I mean, just your comment about you know, the characters in the songs, and they're always you. And I went through Jungian analysis for about 5 years, and the particular analyst I worked with in talking about dreams told me that, at least from that point of view of dream analysis, everybody in your dream is you, whether it's, you know, no matter who it is, as long as it's a person or maybe even a cat, I don't remember, you know, at some element, that person is also you. And so you look at it in a number of different ways. And I just kind of wonder if there's a parallel there.
Songwriting is very much an exploration of your unconscious mind. It's the same way that made, you know, Van Gogh paint with really bright yellows and blacks and create, you know, stark contrasts and the kind of paintings that he did were kind of a twisted version of his subconscious. So, you know, every artist has to deal with what their internal, you know, life is. And a lot of it just comes through accidentally. You don't even know it's there, but there it is.
Well, and I would think that a songwriter especially has to have a really active internal life because, you know, to have put out as many albums as you have, and I'm looking for the number here, reading it. What is it, about 16, something like that?
Yeah, there's 16. I consider it to be more along the lines of, 12, really, because I have some kids' records and some side project albums in there. But, one every couple years.
So you've got to dredge these ideas out of somewhere.
Well, you know, I'm a very open conduit for stories and headlines, and I'm constantly looking, I'm constantly writing, and I'm constantly exploring people's stories. So it's an honor. You know, it often doesn't pay as much as I'd like it to, but it's an honor to do this job, and because it forces you to interact with the world in a very unique way and travel and meet people and really dissect the world and deconstruct it into sort of these 3 or 4 minute songs. And it's been a lot of fun. I'm really happy having chosen it.
Well, speaking of a lot of fun, I have to tell you that I'm not up on the current or even the fairly distant folk music scene. And so yours was a new name to me. You know, when I saw you were going to be playing at Springfield, but it looked interesting. And so when I was going through and reading the bio on your website and reading a quite extensive Wikipedia entry, I don't know how accurate it is, but there's a lot of information on there. And then especially listening to the songs, I'm thinking, you know, I wish I had an hour to talk to this guy because the songs are fascinating and the personality that comes through and even the sound of your voice is a little bit different than your average singer. You actually sound like you could be an older person than you are, and I wondered if there's an old soul in there coming out.
Well, over time, there certainly is. It's appearing more and more less like the choir boy voice that I had when I was in my 20s, which is fine. It's a strange, high-pitched voice. I can get up there as much as the Bee Gees ever did, but I don't need the testosterone to do it. So it ends up being a little bit ragged around the edges as I get older, but it also seems to have a little more soul. So I'm happy with the aging process, and I'm just waiting for the high notes to start to dissolve and the keys to start to be lowered and the capos start to drop and all the things that you have to do to accommodate old age when your fastball doesn't work anymore. But for now, it's still a good instrument.
On your on the website, there's quite a number of references here to your style being especially, well, two things: being classically urban, make it three; second, quintessentially Boston; and third, being very sort of pop friendly, modern listener friendly. And I'm a little curious about all three of those things. Talk maybe about the urban part first, and then second, why specifically Boston? I mean, I know you lived there for a good while, but what does that really mean?
I guess, that's a good question. There's this sort of, a literate quality to it because it's storytelling, and there's an intellectual side of it that seems urban. And over time, I've become more conversational in the writing. Probably at the time those quotes were thrown out there, I was more of a poet and less of a talker, a journalist style writer. And so I think that comes through the language that's used in the songs, I think. And then Boston is probably the strongest folk scene in the country. There are more venues there per capita and more fans of this kind of music per capita and more radio stations playing it per capita. So it was a great place to learn my craft, a great place to go to school in a sort of, you know, barroom kind of way, hopping from place to place to place, learning the trade and getting to see people who are really good at it do it. And what was the last one?
The last one was the what do you think makes you, you know, kind of pop friendly? I mean, aside from definitely a lot of the songs are, you know, have a essentially sort of a pop rock band behind you, but not all of them.
Yeah, I think that in part is because that's the music I grew up in, as well as folk music. So there's, you know, there's often social commentary in what I'm writing about, but there's usually a very hooky, singable chorus that brings people in, and you know, it's a mixture of folk, rock, pop, a little bit of country, and but the message and you know, the touring lifestyle is definitely within the folk genre. So I guess I get to call myself a folk musician, though I'm probably more of a pop rock songwriter than that at times.
Yeah, the tunes I picked for us to play today are mostly not that sound, just because what I personally gravitate to, and also the sound of our station here, and of this show. So why don't we play another one of those? When I told you I'd pick this, you sort of laughed a little bit, and it turns out I picked a somewhat obscure song of yours, although at least on your recordings, but you said it's a pretty popular one anyway, called "Did Galileo Pray," which I found on your Essentials CD. What's the story behind that one? I mean, I was drawn to it initially just for the title.
Yeah, it was you know, at that time in my life when I wrote that song, I was sort of diving into a telescope on a nightly basis, looking up at the stars above Boston, and then reading and trying to research, you know, the history of astronomy, and Galileo's name and story is pretty important in the whole evolution of how we see the sky. And and you know, he was tried for heresy, and I just was wondering if he actually would pray for support from God when the Catholic Church was actually trying him in front of a tribunal, and that led to the song.
And here it is, Ellis Paul's song, "Did Galileo Pray," here on Live and Local, and you can hear him performing live and locally in Springfield tonight at 8 o'clock at the Hoagland Center for the Arts on South 6th Street. That was a song called "Did Galileo Pray" from, well, you can hear it both on an Essentials CD and on a live CD from Ellis Paul. He wrote the song and, of course, the singer. And he's going to be at the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield tonight at 8 o'clock, where you can go hear him live and local. And that's the name of this show here on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. There's the bio of you on your website is really interesting, and there's a number of references here from Bill Morrissey, who I guess is described as a well-known ballad writer. Again, another new name to me personally. But he recalls from your early days with him, I guess, that you would ask him lots of questions about who influenced him and also which songwriters that you ought to be listening to. That was your question way back when. And I'm curious about who some of those were, and then specifically about how you managed to fall under the spell of Woody Guthrie, who's become a pretty important influence on you.
Well, Bill is was my, I guess, portal to a long string of songwriters that went back to his childhood, which was in the 60s. And he, I remember him pushing Ian and Sylvia on me, Dave Van Ronk on me, and numerous others. But he had he was very much first in an era of songwriting and folk music that I wasn't alive during, and a lot of those artists weren't touring anymore. So he was just a great mentor that way, and he had been mentored in very much the same way by Dave Van Ronk coming up in his career, and so that was a real big help. And, you know, the farther back you go, you get into the Weavers and you get into Pete Seeger and Lead Belly and Woody Guthrie, and certainly Dylan is just slightly ahead of those guys as well, as you're going backwards. And, You know, that's just important, I think. This is a music that's really rooted in history and myth in a lot of ways. And getting to know it has really enriched my playing and my sense of what my own personal mission statement is as a songwriter. So understanding it as a whole is really important. And Bill and I both realize that a lot of young songwriters don't do that. They're really focused on getting the hit song or getting discovered and making a career out of this rather than looking at it in a historical perspective and what it all means in the big picture to people outside of ourselves.
What about Woody Guthrie in particular? I mean, there's such a connection there. You've been on a number of tribute tours for him, and I read here that you've been made an honorary citizen of his hometown of Okemah, Oklahoma. Is that how you say the name of that town?
Yeah, very good. Not many people pronounce that right on the tongue. Yeah, it's a beautiful little town in Oklahoma that has an annual festival with his name attached, and it's become kind of where I start my calendar year in a way. A lot of the songwriters that sort of come out of his school of thinking with writing show up, and we all gather there every July on his birthday and plot out our years and do a little celebrating. It's a lot of fun. But his legacy is certainly beyond any of us. He's such an important figure and such an amazing talent. He was a great writer, and his songs, you know, we're trying to seek out the truth, writing about things that were wrong with the world and how to fix them. And he was just so, you know, prolific. He wrote 3,000 songs within a really pretty much a 15, 20-year span. So just a marvelous talent.
How does the state of Maine influence your songs? How has it influenced your songs since that's your birthplace?
Well, in a lot of ways, I come from a small town, and I have that small town illness that affects a lot of people that grow up in that area that you
illness?
Have to get out.
Illness? So, yeah. Why illness?
It is, in a way. It's this urge to see the world in bigger and different places. And I think that wildly has influenced my need to travel and explore and discover things. And I grew up in a beautiful little town in Maine, and in many ways I'm looking for that perfect small town to move back into. But pretty much having being a wide-eyed farm kid, you know, that's really who I am at heart. And I think that's what makes me gravitate towards exploration and figuring the world out.
Let's hear another song. This comes from, you mentioned earlier you had some children's songs. And this is from one with the delightful title of The Dragonfly Races. Wabi Sabi.
Where
does the name come from?
it's a concept of Wabi Sabi is actually a Japanese aesthetic, and it involves beauty and fragileness. And it's really about objects in the home and in your life that have a bit of age to them and soul to them, but have and beauty to them, but also have this sort of usefulness and sort of a spiritual usefulness and then a practical usefulness, like an old fishing rod, an old grandfather clock, something that rusts that's got some aesthetic beauty because of its fragility. And so it's a pretty broad concept thing, but we all have those things in our life, and they're objects that are you know, bring a certain sense of soul to your day-to-day life, and that's why I thought it was important to explain it to kids. Something like the Statue of Liberty, for example, with all its patina and greening and, you know, something like that really is aesthetically what Wabi Sabi is all about.
Okay, well, here it is. Wabi Sabi by Ellis Paul. He's singing from his album called The Dragonfly Races on Live and Local, and you can hear him in Springfield at Springfield's Hoagland Center for the Arts tonight at 8 o'clock. That was a song called Wabi Sabi by Ellis Paul from his album called The Dragonfly Races. which was done as kind of a family album, and you can hear him tonight at the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield at 8 o'clock. Wonderful location, by the way. Hope you get a chance to check that out, those of our listeners. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. And what made you decide to do a family album, and what did that, what does family album really mean to you?
Well, my kids were coming of age where they were really listening to a lot of kids' records, and I wasn't enjoying those musical moments with them because I felt like the songs were really talking down to the kids, and the production on them was really over-the-top kind of obvious. And I felt like, you know, if I was going to do a kids' record, I would want it to bridge the gap between adult and children so that conversations could happen and, you know, over a drive to grandmother's place as they were listening to the record, like, what is Wabi Sabi, for example, you know, and I wanted to engage both kids and parents at the same time. So I'm constantly, when I'm writing these songs, thinking about what's the parents' role in listening to this, and what's the kids' role in listening, and how do they interact with the dialogue after the song is done.
In a live concert, which of course is what people can do, can hear you in tonight, what goes on at an Ellis Paul concert? Do you expect that there's going to be families? Do you have no particular expectation? Do you expect people that are going to actually know a lot of your music? And what I know, for example, you have some poetry I read that you often will do.
What's yeah, I haven't read poetry at shows much, but I do tell a lot of stories in between the songs. And normally the family shows are matinee shows that are specifically designed for family. So the adult shows tend to be 8 o'clock at night, and kids are asleep and tucked away, and I can get a little bit darker and bluer and maybe a little more humorous in an adult kind of way than I can at a normal kids show. But I do, it's not an R-rated show by any means, but it's definitely PG-13. So I don't suggest people bring kids to the adult show. And if I see that they're out there, I tend to back off some of the content if it gets a little bit too blue.
So the song I'm about to play, they probably won't hear tonight, so we're going to play it more for my amusement than anything, which also comes from the Dragonfly Races. It's the bed song, and it's probably self-explanatory.
I think so. It's really about enabling, but you'll hear that as you're listening to it.
Ellis Paul, I thank you very much for joining us here on Live and Local.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it. Thanks for the time.
That was a song by Ellis Paul called The Bed Song. I really kind of thought that was cute, from his wonderful disc, family disc, called The Dragonfly Races. And he'll be at the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield tonight. Support for our show on FM 90.9 comes in part from the Illinois Symphony Orchestra in a program called Fiery Fun, an evening of Latin American and dance music with guitarist Jason Vio and bandoneonist Lydia Kaminska. Friday, November 12th at the Bloomington Center for the Arts in Bloomington. That is, of course, tonight. And Saturday, November 13th at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield. Information is at ilsymphony.org. We also have support from the World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, featuring foods from around the world, including imported chocolates, cookies, cheeses, and gift baskets for the holidays. Also, fine specialty ingredients like saffron, smoked paprika, truffle salt, grain of paradise, and more. World Harvest Foods at the intersection of 6th and University in Champaign. These are some foods I never heard of. So there you go, World Harvest Foods. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and my next segment is, in fact, from the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. We have two wonderful soloists going to be with the orchestra tonight and tomorrow, and some music by Piazzolla, the double concerto for guitar and bandoneon. The bandoneon player is Lydia Kaminska. The guitarist is Jason Vio, who's a name well known to me. We've got some of his recordings here at the radio station. And the program also includes the Estancia Ballet Suite by Alberto Ginastera, and some other music by Piazzolla, the Jealousy Tango of Jakub Gade, and the Firebird Suite of Igor Stravinsky. Great program at 8 o'clock tonight and tomorrow. Thank you both for coming in and joining us on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so did you guys know each other before, or is this a first collaboration in this piece?
This is a first collaboration on this piece. This is our first professional collaboration. We met actually at a house concert for a nonprofit organization that molds classical musicians at the beginnings of their careers in Philadelphia called Astral Artists. And I was playing a house concert, and that's where I met Lydia. And she's currently an astral artist. I have graduated, in quotes. In quotes.
Yeah, so what is that? What do they do, you know, when you say they sort of mold classical musicians?
They take classical musicians that at the beginnings of their careers, they've often won competitions or they're very promising on their instruments, but they're usually, younger, early 20s.
They have auditions actually coming up. They have audition every year.
Every year, yeah. You have to audition for it. Not unlike young concert artists in New York. A similar kind of organization. And so they basically try to shepherd their career until they are able to move them on to like major management. Maybe they'll, help to broker a recording contract, whatnot, whatever needs to be done. They connect them with presenters in the Philadelphia and New York area and elsewhere.
So what was your progress getting there and then graduating, as you said?
Well, I took a long time because I'm a guitar player, and it takes
to get there or to graduate.
To graduate, because they spent a lot more time on me, because it's very hard for guitarists to really break through to the main, more of a, I guess what you could call a mainstream classical music world. I mean, the guitar community and the classical music community have a certain amount of separation, and I wanted to play concertos and play with other classical musicians, play chamber music in addition to my solo recitals, and so Astral, in addition to my management in New York, helped tremendously for that.
What do you mean by the disconnect?
There's just something of the classical guitar community, you can win a lot of major classical guitar competitions, but it's very hard to even the most major competitions are not really connected to like a chamber music series or to an orchestra or to conductors or to major management. There's a sort of a gulf there that you have to really, I had to work very hard.
So you could win all the competitions in the world, and nobody wants to hear you, in a way. Not that because you're not any good, but because they're just not.
You can have a great career. I mean, just playing for for the classical guitar societies and guitar festivals, and that's great. And I want to continue to do that because I've got a long way to go in my own playing. I want to get better, and the best way to get better is to check out all these young players just playing out of their mind, like great guitar around the world. And so I get a lot of good feedback just from watching recitals and learning from people. So
that's interesting, because usually you hear people say, I mean, I don't know how old you are, but you look like you're still relatively young.
And, thank you.
usually you say, well, I watch all these older people and I learn from them. But you're saying you're learning from the younger people.
Well,
is that because they're breathing down your neck?
You learn a lot, of course, from the older players in terms of things like performance and just a career, just the way they kind of handle themselves, the game, if you will, and that kind of thing, the biz and that sort of thing. But the younger players, but there's always advancements in technique. When I was, when I won the GFA in 92. I have to remind myself to clarify. That's the Guitar Foundation of America International Competition, which is kind of like the Van Cliburn of our instrument.
I should have known.
No, that's the thing. It's not very widely known competition, but it's a very important competition for us. But winning that a long time ago, I was sort of, I would have been at that time at the forefront of like a younger technique and that sort of thing, but they're just getting better in terms of they have more better training every 10, 20 years, I think, and the next generation brings better training and education to their technique, you know, the good guitar players.
And Lydia, what's the trajectory for accordionists who also want to play bandoneon?
Trajectory? That's a new word first.
Oh, is it? Oh, how about that? My first question out, and I've got
something.
You already. Well, you began as an accordionist, right?
Yes.
The bandoneon is newer to you.
Yes, about 3 years.
So if you're starting as accordionist, mm-hmm. what's involved in making you decide to play the bandoneon, learning it, and then getting somewhere on it where people are actually asking you to play it?
For me, it was music of Astor Piazzolla. And also, I heard from some other accordionists that they get more jobs playing with orchestra on bandoneon than on accordion in the United States. And actually, that's true. But generally and mainly for me was I wanted to play the instrument Piazzolla played. So I played mostly for tangos or only for tangos.
And where are you originally from?
I'm Polish.
You're Polish. How common is the accordion?
Very common. It's accordion. It's in every academy of music, which is equivalent to university level. So in my school, the accordion teacher had more students than the piano teacher. And we start training seriously, playing scales, music from Baroque era. We have great instruments.
So it's classical quality. Accordion, quote
yes,
unquote, not
yes. From the beginning.
Playing polkas and
no,
stuff.
No, not at all.
And then what about the bandoneon? What made you decide to pick it up, and then where do you get training for that?
Well, this one I learned. I had basic skills like leading the bellows, which is very important, and those instruments. The new thing for me was the buttons arrangement. It's a different system than my button accordion. Also, the location of the buttons, it's on the side of the instrument. So an accordion, I have to open bellows and the left hand only and play with the right hand. This one, you open the bellows both hands. So there are little differences, but I think mainly the bellow changes, bellow work is very, very important. The system, sometimes it's confusing for me because it's a mirror system to my accordion system, but it takes little time. But 3 years and actually I could play it after a few months.
We've had another bandoneon player here who might understand both of you know,
yes,
Julian
yes.
Labro, and the instrument he plays is a German one that I think he told me there's two different kinds of bandoneons where one of them where it
yes,
plays a different
diatonic.
Note in and out or
yeah,
something
it's called
like
diatonic,
that.
Yes.
Which kind have you got?
Chromatic, which is the same note on opening and closing. After, there was a big interest in playing music of Astor Piazzolla in accordionists, and many accordion factories started producing bandoneon. So it's kind of produced for accordion player. It's a chromatic system, which means the same note on opening and closing, which is much easier to learn. And the instruments are great quality as well. So,
well, let's hear you guys do a little bit.
Sure.
You've got a plan here. I'm not
yeah.
sure what the plan is.
We just figured, we thought we'd just play the first movement of the concerto, which is rather short and doesn't feature the orchestra. They don't come in until the second movement. So we could actually just play the first movement
sure.
for you.
Yeah.
And some cadenza. Well,
yeah,
some
and out of
improvisation.
That, yeah, Lydia just, will just kind of take it something from there and play a little bit. So we can hear a little bit of the
yeah.
bandoneon
sure.
and what it sounds like as a solo instrument.
Because the very opening of the concerto is just guitar.
That's
yes.
right.
Big guitar
yes.
cadenza. So this is Jason Bio on guitar and Lydia Kaminska on the bandoneon. And they're going to be playing the double concerto of Astor Piazzolla tonight and tomorrow night with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra in Bloomington tonight and then Springfield tomorrow night. And you're hearing them live in our studio on Live and Local. Thank you. I didn't quite expect the end just all of a sudden right there. Very delicate.
I know.
So that was a bit of an improvisation
yes.
that you just did there. Lydia Kaminska on the bandoneon and Jason Vio on the guitar. We heard the opening movement, this solo and then duet movement from Piazzolla's Double Concerto for those instruments and string orchestra, which you can hear in its entirety in performances tonight and tomorrow with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, Karen Lynn Deal conducting. Tonight's concert is at the Bloomington Center for the Arts in Bloomington at 8 o'clock. And then tomorrow night, it's at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield. And the concert includes some other music of Piazzolla. Oblivion is the name of the piece, I think. Are you
yes.
guys involved in that? That's just for the orchestra?
No, it's for oboe and orchestra.
Oh, that's an oboe version?
Yes,
there's so many
yes.
different versions of that piece.
Because yes.
there is one originally for the quintet, you know, Piazzolla's quintet.
Oh,
yes,
I arranged
course.
It for Suvin Kim and the violinist, F.A. Baltacigil, the cellist in Philadelphia Orchestra. I mean, his music is infinitely adaptable to so many different things. I mean, and it's the kind of thing, if you know the chords and know the tune, it's like a jazz chart almost. You know, you can make it fit with a lot of different instruments. Yeah.
Do you ever play electric guitar, Jason?
I have an electric guitar, and when I was in college in Cleveland in the 90s, you know, I used to play on it, like play jazz gigs and improvise, but I haven't played an electric guitar. The last time I played an electric guitar was for a Stephen Mackey electric guitar and string quartet piece.
Well, I was curious if you had ever played any of the Piazzolla pieces in their quintet version, which are usually electric guitar.
That's right. Yes. No, I haven't.
Yeah,
no.
but you've done.
Yes,
I'm sure.
Done,
quintet
I've
versions.
Done many times, and actually, I will be playing next January. No. March or April in New York, and then it will involve electric guitarist. I love the sound of electric guitar also in quintet. It gives us different flavor. Yeah. Color,
he treats it more of almost a rhythm instrument in the quintets a lot of the time.
Guitar?
Yeah.
Yes, but it has some...
Piazzolla, melodic passages.
Piazzolla always involved all musicians one way or another. So there, at some point, every musician has a place to improvise or has some solos.
I read here just a second ago that you did something kind of recently or with Plácido Domingo?
Yes, I did with actually Pablo Zinger, who also played with Piazzolla.
Oh, right, the pianist.
Yes, we played in the Washington Constitution Hall.
So what was that like to work with Domingo?
It was amazing. He's like most humble man in the world and so nice and, of course, great musician.
I was going to say, I hear he sings pretty well too.
Yes, it's amazing in his age. I mean, he's amazing. Still doing great.
Yeah. You guys are going to do another thing together, aren't you?
Yeah, we can play something. We'll play a Piazzolla tango.
Yeah.
Originally for flute and guitar. If we got time.
Yeah.
I think we.
About how long is it?
It's about 6 or 7 minutes. We better start it pretty
Make
soon.
Make it six, and then we'll be fine.
We'll play just faster.
So this is Café 1930.
Oh, it's a great piece.
From the L'Histoire du Tango.
Yeah. Thank you. Very well timed. That's a beautiful piece.
Yeah.
Was that originally for guitar and flute?
Originally for flute and guitar.
See, I always thought that was an arrangement of something else, but how about that? And so transcription of the flute part for the bandoneon played by Lydia Kaminska and guitarist Jason Vio. Sounding wonderful, and you can hear them tonight and tomorrow night. Take your pick, or go hear them twice if you want, with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra in Piazzolla's Double Concerto. That music was called Café 1930 from the history of the tango of Piazzolla. And the concert tonight is at 8 o'clock at the Bloomington Center for the Arts, for the Performing Arts, sorry. And then tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield. They're going to participate in concert comments with Maestro Karen Lynn Deal at 7 o'clock each evening. And then there's a Springfield Classical Guitar Society pre-concert benefit dinner, I think, on Saturday. Call for more information, 217-816-8832. For more information on the Illinois Symphony, go to ilsymphony.org. And we really appreciate having you on the show today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Support for our show comes in part from our listeners and from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held in the Bouvant's Tasting Room on Saturdays from noon to 4. This Saturday's tasting features Lisa Odom of Maverick Wine Company pouring a selection of wines from around the world. More information is at thecorkscrew.com. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WYLL FM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. I'm Kevin Kelly, and join us for another show Monday from 12 to 1 on FM 90.9.